Good morning, Tucson, Arizona. Welcome to Jump In Tucson. I am your host, Grant Kruger, and I am very excited to be here with you this morning, Tuesday, July 9th. It is hot and toasty. I think we hit 112 yesterday in the old Pueblo. And as it is hot, not a whole lot is going on in the Tucson restaurant industry this week. There is certainly not a lot of new restaurant openings, but we've got one of note to bring up to you. Braving the heat of the summer, Matt Orteo is opening up Rolly's Mexican Patio in the MSA Annex. For those that haven't had a chance to go visit that one yet, that happens to be the sort of container project that probably should have been our local stadium, quite frankly, in the Mercado San Agustin area. And he had his grand opening, his soft opening, I guess, just this Saturday. And I think watching Matt's growth has been something that has been very formative for me, to watch how he's grown from a little taco cart, right, to truck, into a full-service restaurant, and now into his second establishment. And so I wish him a tremendous amount of success. I hope that all of you get a chance to go out there and check out Rolly's Mexican Patio that just opened up in the MSA Annex. As promised this week, however, we're going to dive in to something that has been on my mind for a long time, and that happens to be the tipping culture. And has the tipping culture gotten out of control, not just in Arizona, but on a nationwide level? I'm filling in today for General Ted Maxwell and his engagement hour. And so today on Jump In Tucson, we are going to break down all things tipping. I happen to be joined live in studio with one of my best teammates, Alexis Reinecker, who has worked for me for almost 14 years now in the hospitality industry. Good morning, Alexis.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me. I'm very happy to be here.
Thanks for coming on Jump In Tucson today. Alexis is one of the most important people in our entire crew and union hospitality group. And she hasn't just worked for me for the last 14 years because of my sparkling personality or entrepreneurship skills, right? She's there as part of the tipped industry. She happens to be a bartender at Union Public House and essentially has worked for me for a decade and a half.
Yes, I have. It's been very great. I love it there.
She, of course, says that because I'm paying her for that. But she's not here to wax about how much she's making at Union or our employment over there. We're going to talk about tipping and break it all down for you guys today. But no discussion about tipping would be fair without understanding where the minimum wage comes from and how this affects restaurants in not just on a national level, but also in Arizona. I had a meeting only a few months ago with Oro Valley officials and the Oro Valley Marketplace, who asked me, why aren't there more local restaurants in, say, the Oro Valley Marketplace? And Marana Chamber of Commerce had similar questions. We want more full-service local restaurants. But one of the reasons people aren't building those type of businesses anymore on a local sole proprietorship level is the minimum wage in the state of Arizona. And so where does minimum wage come from? How does this even tie in the United States? Ultimately, we weren't founded in 1776 with a minimum wage at all. In fact, minimum wage didn't come to be until 1938 in the United States and 1961, quite frankly, for tipped workers. But the culture of tipping existed well before that, right? Tipping comes from Europe. And in the 1850s, wealthy American consumers traveled to Europe and found that European aristocracy would leave a few shekels behind on the table for their servers. And we picked up that culture and began to do that in the United States. Looking at the post-Civil War Reconstruction United States, tipping became a way to replace wages up front. There was no minimum wage in any way, shape, or form, not just for restaurants, but for anybody at that time. So nobody was breaking the law with this culture, but there were many jobs out there, including probably most famously the Pullman rail cars, but also restaurants and hospitality industry, where that money left behind on the bill ended up covering the servers' salaries, or in some cases, part, and in some cases, all of their compensation. Minimum wage from a world level didn't exist until New Zealand and Australia in the 1890s were the first nations in the entire world to create a minimum wage. we didn't really get like a big focus on that in the United States until the start of 1894, when the Pullman rail cars went on strike, right? Which actually caused the United States to both recognize this and create an 1894 Labor Day, as we know it today, as the first Monday in September. We ended up with Massachusetts being the first state in the United States to create its own minimum wage in 1912, and others followed in the mid-19-teens. But there was a lot of opposition to the idea of even a minimum wage and whether a business would even be responsible for having to pay that, or would the free market be allowed to dictate that? Hammer versus Dagenhart in 1918, the Supreme Court struck down child labor laws. Edkins versus Children's Hospital in 1923, a Supreme Court decision struck down women's labor laws as well too. And finally, in 1933, the National Industry Recovery Act was actually struck down. FDR had created this to put the 40-hour work week in place and a number of laws to protect women and children's labor rights, and all of those were struck down. And we didn't end up with a minimum wage, believe it or not, in the United States until 1938. And that wage was 25 cents an hour. Now, on top of that, there was a lot of exclusions to that wage. Farm workers were out, restaurant workers were out, a whole number of industries weren't even part of that minimum wage, quite frankly. And minimum wage for restaurant workers, as we know it, did not become a thing until 1961. So this isn't a history of minimum wage that in some way, shape, or form, the culture of tipping or restaurants has violated. The minimum wage is actually substantially newer than tipping. Minimum wage has been raised 22 times in its history, most recently on a federal level in 2009, going up to $7.25 an hour. And so ultimately, that's where it sits today on a federal level. Now, that only 15 U.S. states don't have their own minimum wage that happens to be higher than that federal minimum wage. And so when we come back, Alexis and I are going to bring on Dan Bogert, the COO of the Arizona Restaurant Association. We're going to talk a little bit more about the history of tipping, like what the compensation is of tipped workers in both Arizona and the United States. And we're going to have a very intelligent discussion about the Tipped Worker Protection Act, which is going to be on your ballots in November as well too. So don't go anywhere. Hang in there. If you've got some beefs about tipping, our call-in number is going to be 520-790-2040. You're listening to Jump In Tucson with your host Grant Kruger on 1030 AM The Voice, your home for local news and talk. Good morning, Tucson, Arizona. Welcome back to Jump In Tucson. I am your host Grant Kruger, and I am joined live in studio with Alexis Reinecker, bartender extraordinaire from Union Public House. And on the line, we've got Dan Bogert, COO, of the Arizona Restaurant Association. Good morning, Dan.
Hey, good morning, Grant. Thanks for having me on. And I'll take the promotion anytime you're willing to hand it out.
Steve Chichery might have a few things to say about that promotion over there, so we're going to have to be careful with that one. But thanks for joining us this morning with Alexis and I to talk about all things tipping here in Arizona.
Absolutely. Thanks again for having me.
So we've got a very crowded ballot coming up in November, and one of the big ones out there is the Tipped Worker Protection Act. Can you break down for Alexis and I what that is, and for our listeners as well, too?
Sure. So, and we have the official proposition number now. So it's Proposition 138, also known as the Tipped Worker Protection Act. And it's pretty simple. Arizona has had a tipped credit system throughout the history of the state. And the Tipped Worker Protection Act protects that tip credit and tipping system moving forward by giving a constitutional protection to a 25% tip credit, and then also increasing the base guarantee for tipped workers by $2 above the minimum wage. So that's essentially what it does. And the importance of protecting the tip credit for listeners out there that haven't worked in the restaurant industry is important, because tipping is a way for customers to pay for their service without the added burden of sales tax. You know, anything that you're paying on the menu price, or if there's a service charge or a surcharge, there's sales tax that's tacked on to that. Tipping bypasses that. And what we see when the tip credit goes away is those same dollars are shifted to the menu prices through surcharges or service fees or menu price increases. So the big winner in that is actually the government with more sales tax revenue. But we see tipping percentages go down. We see customer count go down, et cetera. Again, because you're just adding, you're basically taxing something that was never taxed before. And so that's what the Tipped Worker Protection Act is ultimately designed to do.
So right now, Dan, what's the minimum wage in the state of Arizona and what's that tipped wage?
Sure. So the minimum wage in the state of Arizona is $14.35. That will go up in January. We don't know the exact figure of what it will go up to. It's adjusted every year by the CPI increase. So we'll know what that figure is sometime in September. I just want to make one quick correction for you, Grant. There is no such thing as a tipped wage or a subminimum wage. The law, including under the Tipped Worker Protection Act, requires everybody to make minimum wage. What the tip credit does is it allows an employer to credit a portion of the tips received to meeting the minimum wage obligation. The current tip credit in Arizona is $3.
And so essentially with the minimum wage being $14.35 an hour, any employer would be required to make up that difference. Alexis, you're live here in the studio with me. Have I ever had to make up that difference for you? Have you ever not made minimum wage in the state of Arizona?
I have always made minimum wage in the state of Arizona.
And in fact, it's probably substantially more than that, right? The National Restaurant Association says that on average, tip workers make $27 an hour in the United States, and in some cases moving up to $41. And as somebody that does payroll for Union Hospitality Group and has done payroll for a couple decades, I've in fact never ever had to make up the minimum wage delta in any capacity for even one staff member outside of the first week when they're not making tips, of course, like ever, because the tip compensation happens to be so substantially higher than what the base minimum wage is. Dan, do you think that there's a false narrative out there about this, that somewhere servers, bartenders, tipped employees are working for some sub-minimum wage and in fact not being fully compensated?
No, I you know, look, just like anything else, I'm sure you can probably find some one in a million example out there. But we have several enforcement mechanisms in place to make sure that doesn't happen. Starting at the state level with the Industrial Commission, they have their labor division, the Federal Department of Labor. I believe the city of Tucson has their own labor enforcement office now. All of those, and not only that, but wage, any wage dispute has a private right of action attached to it. So there's multiple ways to make sure that's being enforced. And I think any restaurateur will tell you that they don't play games with that. Not only would you have the Department of Labor coming down on you and, you know, fines and having to pay 1.5 times in addition to make up for any lost wages. But in addition to that, you know, you lose the tax exemptibility of all the tipped revenue. And that would put people out of business. So I mean, it's not even close to being worth it. So most operators, 99% of operators out there, their main motivation is to create an environment that generates tips for their employees, because that also is generating customers that are paying the menu price that ultimately comes into the restaurant. So and I think, Grant, you know, what Alexis said is a perfect example of why so many tipped workers are passionate about protecting the tip credit. Because if you look at jurisdictions that have eliminated the tip credit, those tip percentages go down. So, you know, California, their average tip percentage is close to 17.5%, whereas Arizona is closer to 20%. And I would venture to guess, if you ask any tipped employee out there, what would they rather have, an extra 2.5% off of the bill or an extra $3 an hour, my guess is they're going to take the 2.5%, because that's where the majority of their compensation comes from.
Absolutely.
So what's happened in cities like Washington, D.C., where this tip credit has been eliminated, raising the cost of servers across the board? Have we seen price increases? Have we seen a decrease in jobs? Like, this just happened last year. Like, can you tell us about those effects?
Sure. So just to clarify, Washington, D.C. is not fully eliminated the tip credit. They did vote to do so, and they are in the middle of phasing out their tip credit. So they still have a portion of the tip credit, but every year it goes down. So even without it fully eliminated, what we've seen is the first quarter of 2024, 12% of the restaurant workforce was laid off. So the restaurant workforce in Washington, D.C. decreased by 12% in the first quarter.
Well, in one quarter, 12%? That's unbelievable.
It is very much unbelievable. But when you hear some of the other impacts, you'll understand why that was probably necessary. Prices did drastically increase, and we saw a near universal adoption of a service fee model. And just for the listeners out there who aren't familiar with this, a service fee is a mandatory fee, a percentage of the check that is mandatorily charged to the customer. In Washington, D.C., we're usually seeing that in the 10 to 15% range. Now, the difference between that and a gratuity is the service charge is pre-tax, meaning you're going to pay sales tax on top of that service charge, whereas gratuities are all post-tax, so there's no sales tax charge to that. So we've seen that. We've also seen a decrease in the number of diners. There was a survey done of 1,000 Washington, D.C. residents, and I don't remember the exact number, Grant, but it was somewhere between 55 and 60% indicated they were dining out less because of the price increases. And we've seen tip percentages go down in Washington, D.C. as well. And we've also seen some full-service restaurants switch to counter service. And that's where we're seeing a lot of the layoffs occur, because that service staff that was there for the full-service function was no longer needed in a counter service environment.
That's one of Alexis and I's main concerns over here, is that ultimately we could be looking at the death of the full service restaurant business, as both technology finds ways to expedite manners of ordering. You see the rise of customer user interfaces through tablets or touchscreen monitors in some capacity. And at what point do we end up not having servers anymore in our restaurants because the minimum wage for the front of house is just that high?
Yeah, that's a great question, Graham. And, I'm not sure there's a specific number or specific date where that occurs. But I think it's not to get too nerdy on everyone here, but it's a simple mathematical calculation. Consumers, and any of your listeners out there who are interested in checking this, it's a Department of Agriculture statistic, USDA statistic. Consumers spend 5% of their disposable income at restaurants. And that statistic's been pretty steady since the early 1960s. So this isn't something that's adjusted. That 5% number is including what we're leaving for tips. At some point, as prices go up or as things are shifted into the in-menu price and you're paying, upwards of 8 to 10% extra on top of that just for the sales tax component, you're going to see consumers decreasing, and restaurants are going to continue to compete for those consumers. And one way to do that is by eliminating that staff interaction, that paid position, and moving to a technology solution, moving to counter service, relying more on to-go food orders, et cetera. So again, I don't know exactly what that number looks like, but one way that we can definitely guard against that is by preserving the tip credit moving forward in the state of Arizona.
And that's something that you and the Arizona Restaurant Association, along with a large number of tip workers, have both lobbied and actively driven for, happens to be this ballot proposition 138, the Tip Worker Protection Act, that's going to be on everyone's ballot on November 5th. We got one quick minute here, Dan. Give us the breakdown again of the Tip Worker Protection Act, Prop 138.
Sure. It protects the tip credit, which is current law. So that really what we're doing here is we're protecting the current system for full service restaurants. It does a couple of things. It allows servers to continue to keep their tips. It keeps prices reasonable for customers by making sure that we're bypassing that sales tax. You're not going to get sucked into paying sales tax on the service portion of your meal. And it increases the guarantee for servers. Right now, under current law, the guarantee for servers is minimum wage. This is going to increase that to $2 above the minimum wage.
Thank you, Dan. Appreciate you spending the time with us here on Jump In Tucson. That is Dan Bogert, COO of the Arizona Restaurant Association. Don't go anywhere. Alexis Reinecker and I are going to break down the tipping culture when we come back after the break on Jump In Tucson, 10:30 a.m., your home for local news and talk. Welcome back to Jump In Tucson. I am your host, Grant Kruger. We are joined live in studio by Alexis Reinecker, bartender extraordinaire at Union Hospitality Group. And today we are talking all things tipping. Has tip culture gotten out of control? And so, Alexis, you work for tips, right? Like, ultimately, have you ever made less than minimum wage over a period of the week working for Union Hospitality or any restaurant at all in the state of Arizona?
I never have.
So tell us a bit about your history. Like, how long have you been in the service industry?
Well, I've been working for you for about 14 years now. But, you know, I've actually come from a restaurant family. My dad worked at a Vivace's restaurant, actually, for many, many years, 20 years. He was a teacher during the day and worked at Vivace's at night. And it really, you know, he always stayed at Vivace's. So I love the service industry. I love taking care of, you know.
Of people, of course. That's one of the great parts about the service industry is that we get to experience all bits of humanity, right? The good, the bad, the ugly. But part of it, too, is the compensation model, right? Your dad probably made more money working at Vivace than he did being a school teacher, correct?
Yes, he did.
And you probably make more money right now working at Union Public House than a school teacher or probably even a nurse or so. I won't ask you exactly how much you make, right? Because I don't want to delve into your paychecks. But as somebody that does payroll for the company, if we move to a flat minimum wage at $20 an hour, would that be a pay cut for you?
Yes, it would be.
How about $30 an hour?
Yes.
Yeah, right? And probably even substantially higher than that. And so it kind of strikes me as odd that somehow there are forces at work trying to save the tipped workers, right, and protect them. But from what? $30 or $40 or $50 an hour? Like, that doesn't seem to me to be something that needs to be protected from. And no matter where you stand on minimum wage, whether you agree with it or not, I think we could all agree, all of our listeners here on Jump In Tucson, that we would want minimum wage to go towards our lowest compensated staff members, right? To help them out. And yet, the way Arizona's one-size-fits-all minimum wage law is crafted, it actually creates the highest percentage minimum wage increase every year to our most highest compensated employees. And it strikes me as quite odd. Now, as we see, Alexis, the tip culture is sort of getting out of control. Can you give me any examples of where you've been asked for a tip that you think might be inappropriate?
Well, I think the counter service has just kind of gotten out of hand. I also believe that it makes people a little bitter tipping for full service in a way. But I feel like anywhere you go nowadays, there's a QR code and a 20% tip or 25%, whatever you want to do. And it just kind of, you know, changes the restaurant. Like, it's not the same, you know, fine dining maybe will still be around, but, you know, just kind of casually, like, going out, you're talking to a computer.
Without a doubt. And I think we're losing that human element of service here as we make wages higher and higher and higher. I got my windows tinted on the car the other day, and sure enough, there was a checkbox over there for 15%, 20%, 25%, or the dreaded other, right? And I think to myself, is this a tipped position? Is this something that we're supposed to be tipping on? Perhaps us as an industry need to do something to educate our consumers that there are certain positions that should be tipped and there are certain ones that shouldn't, right? I think everybody understands the restaurant world and that full service is worth a tip, right? The average full service restaurant experience has 13 to 14 table touches throughout your meal. It's the greet, the ordering of your drinks, the delivering of the drinks, right? The ordering an appetizer, delivery, clearing the plates, taking your order, you know, checking back when your food is dropped off with 2 minutes or two bites, clearing those plates, the presentation of the check. And so if all of those steps, 13 or 14 table touches, are worth 20%, what is counter service worth? Like, what do you think if you went to Alexis, my tipped friend over here, if you went to a Sauce, and I'm not knocking on Sauce over here, but a counter service type restaurant that happens to have alcohol, and you're asked to tip these high percentages, but not just tip the same percentage as full service, but you're asked at the front of your customer service experience. Is that correct? And what would you tip in those sort of experiences?
I do not believe it's correct. I do always tip 20% because I just feel like that's proper, but I think it's unfair. And sometimes those tabs are easily $80 it's a 20 extra dollar on really doing everything yourself.
Without a doubt. And on top of that, that ask for tip comes outside of the normal cadence of the tip cycle. You don't get to be the judge, jury, and executioner of the tip cycle waiting at the very end of the experience where you, the customer, get to write on a piece of paper, you know, this is what this was worth, and then you turn that paper upside down as well, too. No server can look at it. No server can talk to you about the tip in any capacity. In fact, they won't even know what you've left until, quite frankly, you've exited the building, right? You're free from even any sort of judgment. And this new world of tipping that seems to have popped up happens to have the tablet and the server sort of peering over you on top of the tablet. Do you think that's right?
No, I don't. And I think that also you, once you, you know, hit the 20%, 25%, you kind of disappear to them as well. Like, you don't exist anymore.
Well, and I think that's part of the problem, Alexis, is that ultimately when you're asked for the tip up front and they're getting it, there's not the incentive to drive the service, right? The old acronym tip supposedly comes from to ensure promptness in the English lexicon. And I do think that that carrot at the end of the stick does drive us to also ensure our promptness in the service industry. Do you think we work harder and faster because ultimately there's a tip there for us at the end of the rainbow?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, I do too. And that's where I think that being asked for this tip ahead of time is actually a tremendous mistake for the industry in general. What do you think about tipping on to-go food?
Like I said, I feel like I always tip, but I think you also tip before you get the food as well. And, you know, you might get home and you're missing a few things, and the tip is already there, and your money's already gone.
Yeah, it's a difficult situation, right? But this is tied into the restaurant's point of sale systems. No matter what you order through our point of sale system, we happen to use a brand called Toast, and probably for a lot of listeners out there, you've seen and had interactions with Toast. But no matter what you buy, a tip line pops up. If you buy a t-shirt from Union Hospitality Group, this tip line pops up. I don't want you to tip on the t-shirt. That's not my goal, but the system is just designed to always do that. It's not smart enough to know, well, this is a to-go experience, or this is a piece of retail merchandise as opposed to a full-service restaurant experience. And I think that puts a lot of unreasonable expectations on our customers to tip, perhaps in situations that don't even justify it. Where do you think like a sauce-like experience from a tip perspective, that QSR order at the counter model, what percent tip do you think is worthy in that case?
I would say maybe a 10% tip if they're coming around. They're still like bussing the table and hopefully sometimes, you know, still taking care of the service. But I do not believe it should be a 20%.
Yeah, it's something that as the industry, I believe we need to educate people on, because this tipping culture is getting so out of control. There's so many different ways that you're being asked for a tip these days that ultimately the blowback is going to be the destruction of the tip industry as we know it. And I actually don't think most of the world wants that in their full service restaurant world. I really believe that ultimately people want that level of over the top, fawning, fine dining level of service that we've come to expect out of great restaurants that your father worked at, out of your Vivace's, out of your Union Public Houses, out of these type of establishments. That's what you want. I don't think most of us out there are looking forward to having an iPad and food runners, would you?
Not at all.
And so what do you think we can do as an industry to make that better?
I think, you know, you have your career type people that really enjoy this restaurant, like the restaurant business. They love working in it. They love working hard for it. I really don't know where you go from here. I almost wonder if, you know, all these tip lines, is it because all of the minimum wage growth and maybe locally places can't afford to not, they have to put the tip there?
It's not an easy situation for sure. So when we come back after the break, I'm going to break it down for you guys a little deeper on the Tip Worker Protection Act, the Raise the Wage AZ ballot initiative that's also out there, that's most likely going to be on your ballot in November. Don't go anywhere. Alexis, you are going somewhere because she's heading back to work over at Union Public House right now. Thank you for joining us
this
morning.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate you talking tips with me. We're coming back talking tips after the break on Jump in Tucson, 10:30 a.m., The Voice. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. We are talking all things tipping this morning in the Old Pueblo. We've had both Dan Bogert from the Arizona Restaurant Association and bartender Alexis Reinecker talking about expectations of tips. Now, as we mentioned earlier, you're going to see one, if not two, ballot initiatives about tipping on your ballot on November 5th. There could be up to 14 ballot initiatives out there, which is quite a bit. And two of the 14, one-seventh, essentially 15% are going to be about tipping. The irony of 15% being about tipping does not escape me over here, right? We've got the Tipped Worker Protection Act that Dan talked about. That would be a change to Arizona's constitution, and it would essentially preserve the tip credit as 25% less than whatever Arizona's prevailing minimum wage was. Currently, that tip credit, for those that don't know, is $3 an hour less than what the minimum wage was. When Arizona's minimum wage was $5.13 an hour, that $3 was kind of a big percentage, right? Because that was, you know, cutting that wage in half. But that $3 becomes statistically less and less significant as Arizona's minimum wage ticks up. Essentially, since Proposition 206 passed in 2016, our minimum wage will go up every year in perpetuity. It's tied to inflation, as Dan talked about. And ultimately, we'll get those numbers in let's say, late August, early September, and we'll know what Arizona's minimum wage will tick up to. But being tied to inflation, if one thing you've probably paid attention to over the last 3.5 years is we have had some pretty massive inflation. So it's pretty safe to say that Arizona's minimum wage this year will go up 5 or 6%. Let's call it $14.35. It'll go up to $15 and some change. If the Tip Worker Protection Act passes and it reduces Arizona's wage for servers by 25%, and that's just the base wage, that's not talking about the tipped part, Arizona's tipped workers' wages will never go backwards. If their current wage is $11.35 an hour, $3 less than the $14.35 an hour, and it goes up to, say, $15 an hour, you take 25% off of 15 and some change, which is pretty much a certainty of what Arizona's wage is going to look like, the tipped wage will probably end up being $11.40 or $11.45 or something along those lines. And so this was very carefully picked so that Arizona's tipped wage would absolutely never go backwards. Howard Fisher, who is a well-known political columnist, has berated the Tipped Worker Protection Act in saying that somehow Arizona's restaurants are finding a way to pay their servers, their staff members less. And this couldn't be further than the truth. I'm telling you right here on Jump in Tucson, my dear listeners, that Arizona's tipped wage is never going to go backwards. The point of this is to try to make it not accelerate to a point where we end up eliminating either servers, bartenders, or the tipped process in general. I'll give you a little example of a restaurant group that you may have heard of in New York City that eliminated the tipped wage in their, or the tipped sub-minimum wage, as they call it, the tipped wage in their restaurants in New York. And that's Union Square Hospitality, Danny Meyer, right? He wrote a book called Setting the Table that for many restaurateurs is sort of the Bible of how to handle a full-service customer experience. They ended up ultimately creating Shake Shack. So you might know of Shake Shack, but they were Union Square Cafe, Gramercy Tavern, 11 Madison Park, Tabla, some of the absolute toniest restaurants in all of New York. And they decided to themselves, you know what? We can see that there's this cultural move away from tipping. And what we're going to do in our restaurant group is absolutely eliminate tipping. When you get your bill, there won't even be a line item for tip anymore on the credit card slip. If I hand you that check and you try to tip me extra in cash, I was trained to tell you, you know what? Thanks, but no thanks. Hospitality is included over here at Union Square Hospitality Group. And to do so, they had to raise their prices between 24 and 26% to net that 20% to the servers ultimately. And so customers turned out were not very happy to see the 24 to 26% price increase. They had to add that extra 4 to 6% for all the taxes that suddenly were being paid on the tips. And it kind of makes you wonder why these groups are out there looking to save the servers and bartenders that aren't asking to be saved. You follow the money, listeners. This is all about taxing the tips, 100% to make sure that there's money left over on the checks to pay union dues and to get the government mitts on server tipped income. Now, Union Square Hospitality not only peeved off the customers by eliminating tips, they lost many of their valued service members. They paid the servers $35 an hour and the cooks $25 an hour with the tips redistributed. Sounds like pretty good money, right? Especially in 2017. But it turns out that that $35 an hour was a tremendous pay cut in 2017 to New York City's well-crafted, professional fine dining career servers. And they left Union Square Hospitality in droves. And so on top of that, the customers hated it too. They may want lower prices, but ultimately they also want the ability to decide what is that service worth to me, right? I do want to be the judge, jury, and executioner. I want to sit back and say, you know what? This wasn't good here. I had to wait an extra 2 minutes for my check, and I'm reducing 2% off the tip in some capacity. And so the customers felt disenfranchised as well. And so ultimately, when COVID happened and all the restaurants in New York City shut down because there was ne'er a city that had a more brutal shutdown for COVID-19, when they were able to open back up, Union Square Hospitality killed the hospitality included part of their business model and brought back the traditional tipping model. The customers wanted it, the employees wanted it, and everybody won with that. This is a problem that isn't asking for a solution. There are hundreds of problems in the service industry. There are problems with compensation. There are problems with pricing. There are problems with over-governmental regulations. But one of the problems that does not exist happens to be server and bartender compensation for our restaurants. Quite frankly, this is a solution in search of a problem. And if you want to know why the Raise the Wage AZ Act may also be on your ballot, I ask you, dear listener, to do nothing but follow the money. And they are looking to tax those tips. They're looking to charge our servers more. And quite frankly, I urge you to vote yes on Proposition 138, the Tipped Worker Protection Act, no on the Raise the Wage AZ Act. The Raise the Wage AZ Act will lose if both initiatives pass. It isn't the one that has the most votes. The Tipped Worker Protection Act, or Prop 138, will trump, pun intended, the Raise the Wage AZ Act, as it is a change to Arizona's constitution. And so I want you to enjoy your summer out there. Think about those tip workers, as Alexis said, where she was kind enough to join us out there. 20% is an amazingly great deal to have someone to take care of you and look out for you and look out for every service need you have. I'm hoping we can find a way to salvage the service industry in Arizona, in the United States, across the board. It's been an amazing day with you here on Jump In Tucson. Tomorrow, we've got Tom Moulton coming up from the Southern Arizona Attraction Alliance, or actually Thursday, we've got Tom Moulton coming up. Tomorrow, I've got Ted Maxwell filling in for me on Jump In Tucson. It's been a great morning. I am your host, Grant Kruger. Thanks for spending part of your day with us. At 10:30 a.m., The Voice, your home for local news and talk.